I mean, that's a function of panning, but it doesn't give you the depth or the resonance that, yeah. So that's why I like to work in a studio with a lot of preamps, so that when the sound comes in, it's ultra clear, and I don't have to modulate it a lot to be able to get where I need to go.
Okay.
So I don't do a lot of compression on those. I'll compress a piano. And I'll probably gate a guitar, but I won't compress it.
So you're doing, do you do all of the mixes and mastering for your own albums?
I let the engineer do the rough mix, then I'm with him for the final mix.
Okay.
And I tell him exactly what I want.
Okay.
So, yeah, he gets to...
And the mastering, you just give that to someone to do?
Actually, the mastering is done by the... This time around was done by the producer, who's also a sound engineer, and he used to mix Zappa.
Oh, he used to mix Zappa.
He won Grammys for Zappa,
really?
Peaches and Regalia. That was him mixing.
Peaches and Regalia?
Peaches and Regalia, that album?
That was an album. I
Yeah.
Zappa.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Was that like a later Zappa thing?
Yeah.
Was that before the opera thing he did?
No, it was after.
Oh, really? So it was like really one of the last, very last?
The album? Very last, I think.
The very last.
And to work with Zappa, you have to be like totally open-minded, right?
Yeah, it's basically like a...
So this guy just went at it and just... So I hired him as my producer.
Yeah.
Just because it gave me that buffer where I didn't have to be, you know, at the same time the producer and the artist and whatever. He would call everybody and get them to toe the line instead of me having to do that. So that was great.
So, like, what did he bring to your sound? Did he bring like
He did the mastering. He did the producing, and then when it came time to master, I sent it to this one guy who has a mastering business. And he's with Grey Market Mastering, and he didn't want to give Denny what he wanted, so Denny pulled rank and said, I'll master it. So he ended up mastering my album.
So
because he was taking away a lot of the ear candy from the high end. It was crisp.
Yeah.
And he would buffer it down to get everything like in a tighter zone.
Yeah, compressive.
And it was too much. We were losing clarity. I sounded like Minnie Mouse. It was like, fuck it.
Brought a bit of grit to, like, how was your record, that record you did with him, in comparison to the last record? Like, what did you bring to the table?
The first time he wasn't working on it, so I had to do everything. And part of the issue is I'm the only woman on my set, and when I had to go and see the musicians and say, guys, you're changing the chords, this is not okay. Yeah, well, it sounds better and it should progress like this, and I'm saying, no. Please leave it as is, give me exactly what I want. And then the guys would see me as an oppositional. Instead of seeing me as the person who was paying them, they saw me as the priss singer that just wanted it her way. And I said, fuck guys, I wrote the stuff. So there was a lot of that tension, you know what I mean? Like it's a boys' world, right? So I didn't want to have to do that. I didn't want to have to... Are you leaving?
You're flying next Saturday.
Next Saturday. So I won't see you next weekend.
Kill him over there.
Yeah, I'll try. I'll drink beer.
Drink all the bowls before you get there.
So I hired him for the second album. It was peace of mind. It was really awesome.
He just took over his, like, total
whenever it was time, he would walk into the studio and he would go, guys, I hope you realize that the girl who wrote this song is next door and she's the one that's paying you. Don't go around changing chords.
Yeah. Oh, they were really going to that extreme.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of them actually, the keyboard player, likes, you know. Oh, wow. And then I would say, when are you going to tell me all about it? Well, you'll figure it out when you sing it. You know, that was the attitude I was getting. Yeah. So I sang it once and it didn't work. And then eventually I get a call. Jenny, could you come into the room? So I'm coming in. Could you sing this? I said, just play whatever's written. Well, play whatever's written. It fits. I know.
And then when they did it fit. And
so this guy would just, but he was a guy, so the guys wouldn't put up a fight with him.
Yeah, he had all
when it's a woman, they just, what do you know?
And it's also right. Got that track record too. That
of course. So I didn't have to be the meanie. I didn't have to, you know, it was perfect. And then he gave me that space to actually, whenever I did lyrics, he would really push me in areas where I didn't know I could go or wanted to go.
You mean like, did he make you do rewrites and things like that?
Not rewrites, but singing in the way of delivering. Oh, he would push me at certain times where I, you know, I would just be singing it nicely and he'd go, ugh, give me some guts. And I'd go, really? Yeah, like, give it to me. And then, cool. So it was really interesting. It was a different space. It was like another set of ears onto my stuff. So with the distance.
Yeah. Right. And how did you find people responded to your that record compared to your other records?
They liked this one better. Difference? Yeah. Yeah.
And did you let them as part of like when you talk about the record, you let them know that guy produced it,
yes.
That he did Zappa? And
yeah.
Do you think that is like advantageous?
Yeah.
Or do you think you sell more copies by people?
I don't know that I'll sell more copies, but I just know that my comfort level with the product was so much, like the experience was so much more positive. Yeah.
How did you find him? What kind of you?
He works in the same studio that I work in. And one day, I guess after the first album was done, I had to borrow his editing room because I had an editing product. I had to do, a quick edit. And I had to borrow his room, so he had to go into the large studio. Like, I bumped him, right? And I said, I'm sorry I bumped you and whatever. Here's what I'm working on. And I gave him a copy of my album. And I said, well, if ever you're interested, you know, next time. We'll try. So a couple of years down the pike, I sent him an email and said, I think I'm ready to start the process for a new album. Would you like to be on board? Yeah, sure, whatever. So I didn't get the grant that first year. I got the grant last year. So when I got the grant, I phoned him up and I said, you ready for this? And we didn't know each other very well, but he's amazing. Like, through my album, he was going through a separation, a divorce. He had to find himself a home and a car and whatever. None of it showed. He never, ever brought that in my studio.
Wow.
Ever.
No. Okay.
Like, he's like a mega, I don't know. To me, like, I just go, wow. Well, I don't know if he knows how much power he has to be able to do that. Like, I know very few humans but do this, unless they're yoga masters and they're in their element. This guy steps foot in the studio. He's totally zen. You can't tell there's like an inch wrong. He's never in a hurry, even though he's got something. He's, I don't know.
Hmm.
Just that whole.
Great.
You know, and I kept kidding. I said, you know, I'm grateful that I'm not like in a relationship with you because I'd kill you.
Because he's so, like,
so calm.
He's so detached and so, like.
He wants a nice little more human, a little more.
But as a producer, it's amazing, you know what I mean? As a producer, this is exactly what you want. A guy that doesn't light up flares, that's just easy and, you know, happy. And
Which studios did you work in, Lisa?
Fast Forward Studios.
What was that?
In NDG.
Montreal.
Notre Dame de Grasse. Montreal.
So he's working there all the time, too?
No, he's in and out. I mean, he works for Le Cirque du Soleil. He works for large productions. He worked on the last Pat Metheny project, Orchestrion.
Oh, wow. That's good.
That's him and two of his buddies.
Oh, that's cool.
Pat Metheny?
Pat Metheny.
Okay.
An amazing guitarist. But Orchestrion is something else.
He's amazing, man. He's really awesome. I saw him at a bunch of concerts.
So yeah,
him and Mike Stern, whatever those two must, yeah, Mike Stern, space guitarist.
Space guitarist.
Like, he's got a lot of spaciness to what he
Mike
plays.
Stern.
Yeah. Oh, you have to Google that. Mike Stern.
He's always done his own thing, or is he playing with
him? He's always done his own thing. He's like borderline jazz, borderline whatever. He's like into his own, almost new age, but can be really rock and really hardcore. He's got a lot of really interesting guitar colors. A guitar master to, you know, on his own, like he's just really different.
Have you heard of a guy called Justin Saladino? He's in Montreal. He's a really amazing guitar player. I'm asking people because I wonder how well known he's getting in Montreal. Seems to me he would be.
I don't know, there's the English circle and then the French circle, and they don't mix.
I don't know which circle he's in. Because, I mean, he spoke English, of course, but it could be when he's in Montreal or the only who's in French circles. Eh?
I have no idea.
Wow. When are you going back to that studio? Or do you have an album going on in this thing?
It's expensive.
That's an
expensive place. Yeah, because it's very large. I could fit all of my band, and they have booths. And they can all see each other, so it's a half moon.
In one session, eh?
We play live.
Oh, okay. That's the
we record live.
Event. How many other overdubs did you do? Are just vocals? Or?
This time we've done some vocal overdubs and we've done some percussion overdubs because the lady who plays percussion plays the congas most of the time live. And then we'll add pandero or shakers or whatever else on top afterwards. So these were the only overdubs.
Wow, that's really impressive.
Yeah, live. So 2.5 days.
Oh yeah. So before you rehearse with them, before you go in there?
Like 2.5 days, how many tracks? Because it's you have at least
13
tracks.
Do you often get stuff in one take? Or?
One, two, maybe three. But three with a whole bunch, it's like, okay, after the third time they sort of know it so well, they because they're all sight readers too.
Yeah, well that's it, you can, yeah, that takes a lot of the...
So it's, you know, placing colors and who's going to take what, and they sort of argue about solos and...
and I look at them solos. And go,
oh yeah.
That's great.
Oh yeah, somebody
these
wants a solo.
That's good.
But one thing's for sure, they all have fun playing my stuff. It's challenging enough. It's not going where they expect it.
That's great. I really like the performance aspect of the storytelling aspect.
Mm. Yeah, that was a good show.
Mean, of course, I don't understand any French. Right?
Don't at all?
No. So, but I pick it all up. I see it all. What's going on.
Well, of
like,
course,
in
my face.
Telling,
my face is so expressive.
Yeah, you're very theatrical when you do, right? That's so cute. You illustrate, you tell a story, right?
Yeah.
And there's a really nice mood that you create. Kind of cozy, dim-lit kind of thing. It's really nice. And, yeah, the songs are great. They're real, like, they have that, they have like a chanson kind of,
yeah.
Like a...
Yeah, a bit of a chanson feel.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like a feel like you take people down on a journey, you know?
That's the idea. So it's a, you know, you're in a cafe, in a Parisian cafe, minus the walls and the decor, you know?
Yeah.
You've got all of the rest.
And I think it seems to me too, you're kind of teaching people as well a little bit. Like you're kind of schooling them. Like,
yeah,
like
I'm explaining stuff. Yeah. Like when I'm talking about the Martinique rhythms, nobody else here knows them. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Do you let them know those places you play when you're on stage? Have you been to those places and this music comes from here and I'm going to show you this now? Is that kind of what you do?
Yeah.
It's great. So you've got, there's an exotic quality too. And for some people that's very exotic.
But I'm a storyteller.
Unimaginable place, right?
You know, when you write songs, you're telling stories, right?
Yeah.
So the whole point is to, you want people to follow you in your universe, and the only way you can do that is to open a door and to create a quick link so that they want to follow. So you have to grab their attention fairly quick.
So how do you, what are some of your strategies to grab their attention? Body movement or
well,
volume level or like?
All of the above. Like starting my first song at the same level as everybody else. You know, when I'm sitting, I'm at the same level as everybody. And then I stand up. And, you know, so that sort of progression serves a purpose. And then, of course, the story, because people want to follow the story and what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, from one thing to the next. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was cool. You even had a bit of the theater with the Leo doing the waiter.
Wait,
that was cool.
Yeah, right.
And with the hats.
Yeah, that was cool. And one thing that when we went and saw you in Oxford, it was, right? First time I saw you in Oxford?
Yeah.
From what I remember, you did, like, you kind of, like, did your thing, and then you seemed to have taken, deliberately a completely other direction. Like, you went over and sat on the piano, and I think you did some cover songs.
I did only one cover, an Elton John cover.
That's right. That's my song or something?
Yeah,
like
and it was a challenge from a fellow I didn't know whom I met at the grocery store. And he says, I'll go to your show if you sing a cover tune. And I said, I never sing cover tunes.
Oh.
He goes, oh, come on, only one. I said, so what'll be your fancy? And Elton John was playing on the radio, and he goes, Elton John. I said, fine, I'll do one. So that's why I came on and said, this is I've been issued a challenge that I'm willing to take up.
Yeah.
I never ever sing covers.
Right.
And so I'd picked up that hat and the glasses.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
No, so I pick up on a lot of stuff. Eh?
So there.
But you did really all the songs you did were in French, right? And then you did that English song.
Well, I did one that was in English in Hawkesbury, didn't I? One of mine.
It could be.
It's called, how does it go?
Oh,
song too, I think. Right? No, you didn't? Fine, let's tell her to take some music. Is it on one of your CDs? Is it on one of your CDs?
No. It's never been recorded.
Wow. Is it your song or is it
yeah.
Own, yeah.
It's called the...
What's that song about?
Well, it says, I'm riding on a shoestring. I let the gator go astray. I'd rather be skinny dipping on a hot and sunny day. I guess I'll be playing till my arms don't want to keep on. Showcasing at the Canadian Music Week in Toronto at the Transac, large place. And all of my set was in French and I didn't have any English tunes. So I wrote this on the way to Toronto in the VIA train. And when I got there, I told the guys, the musicians I had ordered, I said, we gotta do an extra tune. Here's what it looks like and here's a quick chart. Can we play this? So we turned it into a little bit of a New Orleans kind of stomp.
That's awesome.
What is the next show that you have coming up? I mean, you're not going to do anything in Germany, right?
Next show is Montreal in May.
Yeah.
All right, for your album release. It's going to be your album release.
In Montreal. Yeah, but it's a full show. This one's an hour and a half.
Thank you.
can't plan to think of where I'm going
thank you. was cool.
Sultans of Swing.
Sultans of Change.
Of Change? Okay, hold on, hold on.
We have to change it because we can't do the swing the way they do because there are three guitars.
Oh, okay.